Hi, I'm Kristen Shepherd on The Wonder Files. Welcome. Today on The Wonder Files, we will be in conversation with Michael Gellert, who has written a wonderful book called The Way of the Small, Why Less is Truly More. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Now, Michael, at risk of taking up a third of our program, I'll just whip over a few of your references. Michael was born and raised in Montreal. He did teach humanities at Vanier College in Montreal for a while. He has studied Zen Buddhism in Japan for a number of years. He now works as a Jungian analyst in Los Angeles and Pasadena. He has worked as a mental health consultant in various places, including at Time Magazine and with the employees of the city in New York. Is that enough, Michael?
That's fine.
All right. He is the author of two books before this one, one called Modern Mysticism and one called The Fate of America. Michael, I was intrigued by this book because we are entering a season that might as well be called The Way of the Big, Why More is More, and I find it a really attractive idea to explore the way of the small, and I wonder if you could describe for me what the way of the small is for you.
Well, the way of the small is a term I use to describe the universal teaching that is common to all the great religions of the world and many schools of philosophy. It teaches that the key to success and happiness is an authentic, meaningful life. And the way to have that is to live small and to be small. Now, this doesn't mean what it means in the colloquial popular language, you know, to be petty or small-minded or disempowered. It really means that we live modestly, simply, within our means and according to our natural limits, that we focus on the details of everyday life, and that we accept life on its own terms, good and bad, happiness and suffering, and the dark and the light. So that, in a word, is the way of the small.
Why did you write this?
Well, a couple of things. As you said in your introduction, I think not only the season we're in, but in general, we are living in an age that can best be described as an age of grandiosity.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of inflation. It's not just economic, and it's not just a problem that comes in cycles, like inflation and recession in the economy. It's a general mindset. It's a psychological and spiritual plague. Most of the problems in the world, when you really analyze them, you see come from bigness, from people, from nations, from leaders, wanting to be bigger than their britches, wanting more power, problems such as the ecological crisis that we're facing today comes from, consuming too much from the earth, putting too much pollution into the air. We don't live within our means. So I wrote this book in part as a response to the bigness of modern life. I think living small, being small, is the most viable alternative to that. On a personal level, I came to this through a personal experience of diminishment. As I described in the introduction, I had a series of experiences all in a very short span of time. I had a brain tumor, and I had to go in for surgery. I went through a divorce. 9/11 came, and as you pointed out, I have connections with that very neighborhood. I worked in it for 8 years. All of this left me feeling very small, very insignificant, dealing with feelings of failure and what does my life mean. And I found that the struggle that came from that, it's human nature to avoid those kinds of feelings, depression and so on. They diminish us. But I found that when I turned around and embraced the diminishment and accepted it on its own terms, and I allowed the smallness to be, that the situation slowly transformed. So it really came as a personal response toward the natural human resistance we have toward smallness and the diminishments of life. It was my way of working it through.
I had a real question when I was reading that part. You talked about happiness emerging, one day realizing that you were happy, even though the circumstances hadn't changed. Something about allowing it to be created something good for you. And that makes me wonder about the question between resignation and surrender, the difference between those two things. Because I could picture somebody resigning themselves to that scenario, but that not creating something positive. Yeah. Do those two words mean different things to you, or?
I think I understand what you're getting at. Mm. There's, defeat, mm. when it is something that life imposes on us, because life can be overwhelming. It's not something that is contrary to our human nature or the possibility of fulfillment. It's part of our nature to go through experiences of defeat. Mm. The mystics and the great philosophers teach that happiness and suffering or surrender and defeat are not mutually exclusive. They go together. So, to answer your question, I think by resignation you mean giving up.
Yes.
Letting go when there's still something you can do to make your situation better. Mm. That's different than surrender. Surrender is when you are really faced with overwhelming odds, and instead of fighting it and fighting a useless battle that will just wear you out, you turn around and you say, yes, this is something that has come into my life, and you embrace it. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of wrestling with the angel, to use that image from the Old Testament, that brings a blessing of its own.
Mm-hmm. You say at some point that our smallness is what makes us great. And I loved the idea that we can stop pretending, you say right after that, that we can stop pretending to be great by inflating, by being grandiose.
Right.
And there's something appealing in that, although I still am wrestling a bit by what my smallness means.
Well, on a human level, we're all small just by virtue of being human. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a vast cosmos, and the more science develops the ability to send satellites out into outer space, the more we realize that there's no end to this. Somebody once described the human drama as if you were driving on the highway at 90 miles an hour by a farm and there were a fly on the back of a cow. The fly on the back of the cow, you just whiz right by it. That's about how long we are on this earth as individuals.
Yeah.
We're also very insignificant in a microcosmic sense, not just macrocosmic, not just the size of the cosmos out there, but on a microcosmic level. We know that now when you go down to the molecular level and then into the atomic level and then quarks, that these are huge distances and that you can keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and the infinitesimal is also infinite.
Mm-hmm.
The human experience, the human dimension, is really a very small slice between the macrocosmic and the microcosmic. And in that small slice, that little fly on the cow's back, is where everything takes place. Our capacity and our search for joy, for love, for meaning, our relationships, our moral dilemmas, our wars, our genocides, everything happens in a very small slice. So to embrace that, and religion teaches that, philosophy teaches that, the artists illustrate that as well, to embrace that is to really inhabit consciously our limitations and not to be bigger than that, not to pretend that we know the answer to these things. That is godlike. You see, to be inflated or to live in a grandiose way, it's the human impulse to always want to go beyond our limitations because we're insecure. here in this vast cosmos, and to pretend that we're God. You get that image early in the Bible with the Tower of Babel. It was the very first image of grandiosity. And it even starts with Adam and Eve, you know, getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden. It was, you know, an act of pride, at least, you know, the idea of Satan's temptation and so on. It was an act of pride to rise above our human condition. So, on a larger level, that's what that means. On an individual level, it means simply this, that happiness or fulfillment really doesn't require a lot. You know, we think of happiness as demanding a lot of things. We need a new house, we need a better vacation, we need a bigger car, we need wild excitements. But in fact, the sages teach that it doesn't take very much to lead a happy life. And if you look at the happiest people in history who were able to sit down and write about it, it was usually the small things that made them happy. Now, you could name a host of people like that. Henry David Thoreau was a master of the small. Marcus Aurelius, Lincoln, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and, you know, ordinary people, too. You look at the ordinary people you meet who are happy, it's usually small things that make them happy, and inhabiting their human smallness with, you know, a sense of surrender and acceptance.
Yeah, you quote Marcus Aurelius as saying, remember, very little is needed to make a happy life.
That's right. And he was a, not just a philosopher, he was a Roman statesman and a general. So he was, you know, had a very glorious career and was a had a long personal experience of being a conquistador. His life was lived making conquest, and he came to this realization that that is not what makes happiness.
Well, that's lovely. We are going to go to a break in a moment. I like that you described that the way of the small is fully inhabiting that small slice of the cosmos we live in. I wonder if after the break I might ask you a couple of questions, specific questions that come up later in the book about perfectionism, about mediocrity, and again about this season that we're rolling into. I'm Kristen Shepherd on The Wonder Files. I'm in conversation with Michael Gellert, the author of The Way of the Small, Why Less is Truly More.